This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. The courtroom is set for the final segment of closing arguments. After that, the judge will be sending the jury to deliberate. Let's hear the final segment of closing arguments in the trial of Alex Murdaugh.
Dealing with the law firm, so even the...
Not the prior.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the state gets an opportunity to do a rebuttal. Mr. Meadows.
Police of court.
Good afternoon.
On behalf of Attorney General Alan Wilson,
Deputy Don Zelenka, Deputy Attorney General Craig Mortars, and this entire team, and I want to name them all, but thank you for being here. Thank you for the attention you've given this case. Being a juror is not an easy job. I'm not a jury watcher. I don't sit and stare at jurors, but goodness knows we've been here 6 weeks. I have looked over occasionally. Not to pry, but I've noticed when I have looked, you've all paid attention, so thank you. 6 weeks. Thank you. And I'm not going to be that long. Your clerk, Ms. Hill, has done an outstanding job bringing the world to Colleton County, bringing the world right here with the hospitality of your grace, making everything as convenient as she can. But the one thing she didn't do and couldn't do is give you a booklet on how to be a juror. 5.5 weeks ago when y'all got here, 6 weeks ago, she didn't have that pamphlet for you because they don't exist. There's not a book on how to be a juror. But you have been preparing for this moment in this courtroom to decide this case your entire life. And it's called life. It's called living. It's called experiences. It's called interacting with your spouse, your children, your neighbors, your coworkers, your good experiences, your bad experiences, evaluating people, and deciding what's credible, what's believable. It's true in every case I've ever tried in my 34 years of doing nothing but murder cases. Credibility, believability. And I agree with Mr. Griffin. When I looked at this case the first time, I said to myself, this is a CSC case. Now, in our world, that means criminal sexual conduct. It's not a criminal sexual conduct case. This is a common sense case. And you didn't leave that common sense with you when you came here 6 weeks ago. It's with you now. It's been with you during the 6 weeks here. And you're going to take it back into the jury room. I've been listening yesterday and today, and we all have, about law enforcement didn't do this, law enforcement didn't do that. I think they actually said they fabricated evidence. Putting law enforcement on trial. I once called Mr. Harpootlin in a trial an automatic smokescreen machine. I think what the defense is doing in this case is more like an eclipse. You remember that eclipse on August 17th of 2017, where it kind of got dark for a little bit, and the birds started chirping, and you felt like it was dark, and then it cleared, the eclipse went over, and the light came back. That's what the defense is doing, taking you away from the facts, from the credibility,
and saying, wait a minute, there's eclipse here. There's a smoke screen here. Look at that. And somebody said the word offensive. I find it offensive that a family with a great-grandfather, a grandfather, a father, Celester Randolph Murdoch, who was good to me when I was a young man, prosecutor, he knew I wanted to do this as my job. He knew I cared about this job. This is the best job in the world. I tried to be solicitor three times as long. It doesn't get any better than this job. And I find it offensive that the defense, through the defendant, who was also a part-time solicitor, is claiming that law enforcement didn't do their job. Listen to me, please. Didn't do their job while he is withholding and obstructing justice by not saying, I was down at the kennels. I was down at the kennels. I was down at the kennels. And he's going to blame everybody else. Is that offensive? Is that offensive? Mr. Griffin said a minute ago, can you imagine coming up on the scene and seeing, can you imagine not telling law enforcement? Lying that I was down there and I saw him. I was right there. Why wouldn't you tell him that? Maybe get some more evidence. Did you hear somebody? No, I wasn't even down there. Credibility, believability. That really does sum it up. You remember 6 weeks ago today, when Mr. Waters' fantastic opening and talked about direct evidence, and direct evidence is something you know it when you see it. It's evidence you gather with one of your senses. You hear it, you feel it, you smell it, you touch it, and you come in here and tell witnesses, hey, this is what I heard, what I felt, what I smelled, what I touched. But do you remember when he was describing circumstantial evidence? There was a storm that day coming. Part of his theme, the storm just happened to come. And you could hear it coming. And then, during part of his opening, you remember it started raining? You could hear it. You could feel it. It's almost like circumstantial evidence morphed into direct evidence. And that's what happened in this case. Circumstantial evidence became direct evidence in many instances. This case is about two things. It's about being real, and choices. My mama gave me a book when I was a little boy about the Velveteen Rabbit. He's actually going off to college, dealing with people and learning about people and tough times in life. Go get the Velveteen Rabbit and read it if you haven't read it. But she just put in the front of that book, and I love my mama. Always be real. Always be real. And this case is about that defendant never being real. And choices, which I'll get to at my end. Ladies and gentlemen, but they blame everybody but Alex. Everybody but Alex. Let's go back to the first. I'm not going to bring it out. But this back here, the press release was sent out. There's no danger. There's no danger. What did Alex not do? They showed a tape there. He's asking the sheriff, I think, to call Buster. First time he tried to call Buster, took the sheriff a while to get out there. You know when the first time he called Buster? It's about 40 minutes. Well, actually, he texted him, didn't even call him. Wasn't his first thought. Wasn't the thing after he did 911. It was later. Perhaps even when some of his friends had gotten there. Don't call. No, right off the bat, this happened, call my son. Call him.
Buster, stay where you are. You with your girlfriend up there in North Charlotte. Go, go, go. We got some people after us. That's what's real. Don't you? You go to the police station right there. And what else do you do, too? You don't talk about being real. What do you do? Y'all, I just left my mama. She's with Shelly. Get somebody over there. Get them over there. If these people are out here to kill us, get them over there. Go, please, take them right now. They're by themselves. I can't do that. That's why I took the guns. I can't tell them that. That's what's real. And he brings up the bucket case right away. Right away. A year and a half previous. He's coming up for a hearing. Nobody's thinking about that bucket case except Alice. And right then, he's using it to throw off. Here's your first suspect. Does that make any sense? They have a hearing coming up. They're going to look to resolve this thing. Nobody's out there thinking about a boat case on a Monday night. Anybody upset about that? Think about all the facts that would have to happen. They'd have to know both that, as Mr. Waters said, somebody in the boat case would have to know that they're both there. They'd have to know they were there. They'd have to know that Alex is just wasn't there. Oh, no, wait a minute, that he was there, but just for a little bit and went back up to the house. And they'd have to come. You know what? We don't need a gun. There'll be guns there for us to use. Yes, and that's great circumstantial and direct evidence. I'll get to that. They'll have guns there for us. They'll have guns there for us. We can use them. Does that make any sense whatsoever? Let's talk about murder. Murder is the intentional, malicious killing of another living, breathing human being with malice aforethought. What's malice? Y'all know what malice is. It's the name malice. It's the evil wickedness one person shows to another. You know how long it's got to exist? Just like that. At the pulling of a trigger. 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 Malice aforethought. It can be expressed. Rarely happens. I'm going to kill you. Or it can be inferred. It can be inferred with the use of one gun. There's no claim of self-defense here. They're claiming they weren't there. It can be inferred two guns. Malice aforethought. And we don't have premeditation in this state. We don't have to prove premeditation. We don't have to prove motive. I think it's been proven. His world was collapsing. Mr. Griffin goes, does that make sense? Did in his mind. His world's collapsing. His world's coming down. This was the only way he could save. It's the only way. It's the only way he could save Alex. But if you don't, if that motive, well, I don't know, is that enough?
Don't know.
We don't have to prove motive. We're certainly there. That's one explanation. But if he's down there and he's angry,
just don't sound like a real jovial there. Bubba!
Don't let me forget about Bubba. Bubba! Come here!
Maybe you just got angry.
Maybe you got angry at Paul.
Maybe he got angry, you know, you started all this with the boat case.
And maybe he just lost it. Maybe he just lost it. Maybe it looked like a suicide. And then Maggie came
and he had to shoot her. I don't know. Only one person knows.
And that's why we've got the motive. That's why we say he did it. But we don't even have to have motive. Just angry. He did it. Nobody else could have done it. Nobody else did do it. I'm going to get to that, and that's how we prove beyond, I want to say all now, but our burden's only reasonable now. But losing it, and then you get the question, well, have you proven malice? Well, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Two shots to Paul. Malicious.
First one didn't do it, the second one finishes him off.
Five shots to Maggie. Not an accident. One shot, two shots, three shots, four shots, maybe five shots, depending on whether this one's running through. That's malicious.
So if you find he killed him and you get the malice,
I don't think there's any dispute in me about that this is a malicious killing. But I've got to go over that with you. Malice of forethought. And then the burden on us in this case, as in every case that's tried in this wonderful land of ours, that's why this is so great, I agree with you, is beyond a reasonable doubt. We'll borrow all these waters if that's okay. It's not beyond all doubt. If that's the case, this courtroom wouldn't have been here as historically as long as it had. The law doesn't describe that. And listen to His Honor. And I'm not playing up to him. He is the best. He's the law. Listen to him when he reads the law. Beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not beyond all doubt. We can't do that. It's beyond a doubt that would make reasonable folks hesitate to act. I was trying to retrial a case years ago and reading reasonable doubt from this ex-solicitor, Solicitor Wilson, I'll give him credit, describing reasonable doubt, and he said, sometimes, you know, questions are just questions. You can't answer every question, and the law doesn't require it. If after hearing all the evidence, you don't, or if you're firmly convinced of the defendant's guilt, you must find him guilty. If, on the other hand, you're not firmly convinced, then you must find him not guilty. He goes to see his mother. He goes, and you see the OnStar taking him up to the side, over near the smokehouse. We submit to you that's when he went to hide the guns. It's common sense. We submit to you that there's a driveway there. Nice pavement. You can look at it. Nice paved driveway. Submit to you when he came, it was 9:30 at night. The testimony is very unusual, very rare. Kind of funny is Miss Nixon, who testified earlier, we talked to her recently, didn't remember any of the conversation, but said she called and said he told him your dad's not doing well. Well, he didn't go there that afternoon when he got the phone call, when his office is right near there. Go see him then. He didn't do that. He waited to 9:30. I don't know if anybody's got any folks that are suffering from Alzheimer's, but when they're asleep, they're tired. He wasn't going to love his mama. He wasn't going to be with her. He was going there because he loves Alex. He loves Alex. And he was going there to create his alibi. At 9:30 at night, use your common sense. And you remember, she said he called. What happened after that? Well, it was about 5 minutes or so. At first I was thinking, well, that's when he was going to hide the guns. And the time frame over there is so important, not for how long he was from left to come back, but it's how long he was in there with Shelley. How long he was in there. Because that's when he was hiding the guns. The guns are missing, though. He was hiding the guns. And what does Shelley say? He didn't stay long. 15, 20 minutes. He left. And later that week, and I don't know which one in my mind right now, I'm so tired. But one of the days she came by, I think it was after the visitation, and he says, Shelley, you remember I was here about 35 or 40 minutes? Y'all remember looking at her up here on the scene? She got visibly
upset. I said, what's wrong?
Ask her, what's wrong? Why, what's wrong there?
Was he there 35, 40 minutes?
No, sir. Why are you upset? It's a good family.
You think she knew right then?
He's coming back to say, hey,
I was here 35, 40 minutes now visiting my mom. Shelly said, no.
No, you weren't.
So upset that she calls her brother, police officer in Yamasee. You think she knew right then? And that's real. That's real. And Shelly's real. You saw her, but body language is so important, right?
Body language is so important. We're talking about the defendant.
All our body language. You see Shelly's.
And then one day that week,
never before, never, ever, 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 ever before, at 6:30 in the morning, doesn't call.
He didn't need a timeline to create for that one, does it? Didn't want a timeline. Didn't want a record of that. He comes to see Shelly.
You ever been out of that time before?
No, sir.
What was he saying? It was some blue, vinyl-like. Remember what I tried to show? What? It's like this.
What did you think it was?
A tarp. I don't know what it was. And they try to gloss over it now. Hey, one thing they didn't gloss over. You remember when she was on the stand? I said, well, have you talked to them? Have you talked to their investigators? Well, yes, sir. Did they record you? Yes, sir.
Can I have a copy of it?
And then we came back and we got a copy. And two investigators, they were worried about it then, went down and talked to her. And talked to her about her times and ran times by her and asked her if she'd ever seen anybody in this blue coat. Have you ever worn it? They were worried about it. So that's great circumstantial evidence. It kind of morphs into direct evidence. I saw him coming at 6:30. You even heard, they asked one of the experts, well, could it stay on there for 5 years, 10 years?
Sure.
This was days after the murder. Shelly sees him coming in with a blue something. Well, where'd he go? He went upstairs. Why? I don't know. Did you see it later? Thought I saw it on the chair. Can't answer every question. Miss Mixon sure didn't see it the next day. Now, ask her, was there another tarp there? Well, there was a blue and silver tarp. Picture of it, too. That wasn't it, though. This was all blue. And the only other blue tarp that's in evidence, and I let it go in just so I could argue this right now, is the tarp that they showed Jelly that they got from Kmart. That's not real. This tarp, no. Looked like that. I don't know what it was. He had it bundled up. Well, lo and behold, when we find out this information, and they try to make a big deal about it, I think it makes it more pure. She's at a traffic stop or an accident or something. She tells the police officer, I forgot about this. You can't make it up. So they get a search warrant, and they go search. And lo and behold, crumbling in the closet is a blue vinyl something where you pull it out and it's this jacket. You see how evidence of a fact and another fact that leads to the fact in question? I don't know why he put it in there. I don't know why he killed his wife and son. I don't have to say why. I think he did it to protect the one he loved the most. The one he really loved the most, so he could keep his lifestyle and not be embarrassed financially, and he wanted to keep going and loving Alex. I don't know why he kept that jacket. Maybe it was Solicitor Murdaugh's jacket. Certainly consistent. It might have been in that truck. I think one of the family said he kept a lot of stuff in that truck. Might have been out in that something else. I don't know. But he brought it back in there and hid it. 6:30, days after the killing. And what's inside? What? Wait a minute. What's on the outside?
There's a little bit of gunshot here and there.
What's on the inside? The inside. Minimum 38 particles.
It got so much that Megan Fletcher finally said, you know, we get, I can't remember the term right now, we get so many, I just stopped. I'd have been there for days.
Gunshot residue. Inside the rain jacket, the blue tight garment that Shelly said, I saw him carrying something like that. He got rid of the guns, and he's hiding it there for some reason. Thank goodness he did, because thank goodness for Shelly for bringing that in. That's what he disposed of the guns with. And he went out tapping.
She said he left, and
before that, she thought he'd left, and he came back, and he had moved to ATV, and then he said he was in another truck, and he came back, then he left. He's disposing and hiding whatever he is doing with that evidence. Only one person does. But that blue rain jacket, that tarp, is incredible circumstantial evidence that we ask you to consider when you go back there. Is Shelly making that up? How could she make that up? How could she know there'd be a blue tarp in that closet? Same closet, same stairs he went up, so we went upstairs. Can't explain the tarp on the chair. Don't have to. We can't answer every question. That doesn't mean it's not reasonable doubt. She saw a blue tarp light. It was in that closet. It's got gunshot residue on it a few days after.
Maggie and Paul were brutally murdered.
And that's consistent with every reasonable hypothesis.
And you know the thing he told Shelly?
The night when they were talking. You're getting married, aren't you? You remember her saying that? You're getting married. If you need any money or help with it, let me know. It's incredible timing.
Oh, and your job, don't you work for the school?
You know, I've got friends down there.
I can help you on that if you need. I was there 35, 40 minutes.
Can you make up the sequence of facts that lead to the conclusion he's trying to get her to say, I was there longer. I wasn't outside longer.
Blanca. Blanca loved Maggie.
I didn't realize that really until I talked to her just a few times. I met her years ago at a federal prison. Remember when I saw her? Remember her name? But you know, even when Blanca was quit working for him for a while, and you remember she had health problems and said she saw Maggie on the road somewhere. And they kind of pulled off and just talked. Just called up. Blanca cared about Maggie. Knew her so well, she knew what she wore to bed and what she didn't wear to bed. And that kind of bothered about the clothes that were laid out. Some undergarments, which she knew she didn't wear. But Blanca's texting Maggie. Maggie's texting Blanca on June 7th. And in one of her statements, and I'm going to get to those. He said, you know, Maggie wanted to come. She wanted to come.
Well, no, sir.
No, she didn't. She was having to work on her data stuff. He tries to say in here today, look, she was in Charleston. She was going back to data stuff. Remember the text of Blanca? Well, I left the workers there, but I guess it'll be okay. He had said, come. I want you to come. She didn't want to come. We also know that from her sister Mary, who added a little regret in here today. Didn't hear much regret from over there. But you know who regretted? Who was real? It was Mary. I encouraged her to go. She didn't want to go. They got in clutch. You know, it's like siblings. Jane, Marshall, James, I had to get my siblings on the record.
we love each other.
But you had that relationship, you know, we weren't close. But then we got closer as the kids got older. I got young. We were close. We talked. One of her best friends. And she told her, why don't you go on over there? She regretted that. But she killed her about it. But that refutes his lie. Oh, she wanted to come. She wanted to come. No, sir, you wanted to come. Why? Had he already planned it out? Was his world collapsing? He didn't have to. We don't have to prove he did. But he got her there. She wasn't planning on being there. Blanca's got the food ready. She leaves. Let's stay on the real train for a minute. She goes home. She gets a call sometime that night. And this is real. What does she do when she hears? She drops the phone. Remember that? Her husband had to get on the phone. She dropped the phone, real emotion, because she cared about Maggie. That's real. And you remember she described that day when she left, Alex leaving, and I put his shirt up, got his collar, helped him with his, I assume it was a blue jacket, I don't know, described the shirt. Remember, he just kind of tucked it in. And now in Alex's second interview, when he's confronted by David Owens, and they actually showed him the video of the tree. They showed him that. When did you change? When I saw you that night, you were wearing shorts. When did you change? And you remember what Alex said on that interview? When is that? When is that time? Was that? And then he told him the time, 7:44, whatever it was. He said, well, I guess I changed after that. Well, those are the clothes he was wearing when he murdered Maggie and Paul. Those are the clothes. And what does Blanca tell us? That was on August 11th. She said sometime mid-August. I didn't know this. You can't make it up. Sometime mid-August, he comes to see her. Do you remember that shirt when I left that day? I said, no. I mean, yes. It's a Vinnie Vine shirt. You weren't wearing a Vinnie Vine shirt. I fixed your collar. He tries to get her to tell what he was wearing. He tried to say, no, you weren't wearing that shirt. That Columbia shirt, you've got one of those. But guess what? I ain't seen that one since. I have not. Blanca and Shelley. That's great circumstantial. Did you ever see that shirt again? Never saw that shirt again. Ever. Where's the shirt? You know what I forgot about Shelley? I don't think this was mentioned. When Shelley sees Alex that night, you remember what she said about his clothes? Shorts? Shirt? What she said about the shoes? Sperry type. Cloth shoe. You remember that? When Dave Owens and those get there, when I think I accidentally put some of the dust out on the... Those aren't Sperry shoes. He's changed his shoes again. I'll get to you in a minute while that's important. I'm going to visit his mom. He's got Sperry type shoes. He comes back and puts on the shoes. Why? Is she making that up? Blanca said, I've never seen the shoes before. When I got there the next morning, there was a T-shirt that looked like it had been pulled down, fell on the floor. Where does he keep it? She washes her clothes. Those are clean shorts up there. This is where he kept his shorts. Did he wear these shorts much? No, he didn't wear them much, but she knows that family. She knows where the shorts are, where the shoes are. Do you remember the Sperry shoes?
Yeah.
Did you see those? Never saw them again. Never saw that shirt again that he was wearing in the video. Never saw it again. And when he confronted her at the house about what he was wearing, she had real feelings and told about that. And told law enforcement about that. Is that real? And why is that important? Because it goes back to credibility and common sense.
Those were clean clothes that Shelly had washed. Excuse me, that Blanca had washed. And when we get there on the scene that night, you remember Laura? Miss Rutherford. She's sitting in the back. David's in the front. Alex in the front. His lawyer's on the side. And you know, it's something else I don't understand. Your wife and your son has been killed. And you're worried about having a lawyer around? Everybody said, well, you know, just agents. We need to have a lawyer around. Really? My wife and son have just been butchered, and I'm worried about having a lawyer. But they did. And that threatening, overbearing, cheating, manipulating. You know, that's okay. Put his hand on his shoulder. So did Laura. What are you doing? I got a heart. Is that rushing to judgment? I got a heart. I didn't rush to judgment. They were saying, tell me what happened. Tell me what happened. Well, and he starts looking at his phone. You can check my phone, the alibis that he's created, that he's doing. And he says, I went and ran. I got on my knees over here. Went and ran, and I tried to take the pulse of Paul. I'd still be on the ground arguing myself. And I tried to turn him over. I kept trying to check his pulse. Really? I went to Maggie, checked her pulse. And you can't do that in the 20 seconds. He's now trying to say you can. You can't. And they've tried to change that. And he never did it. Because what did she say? What did Miss Rutland say? He was clean. He was clean. He was clean. He was clean. He washed up. Yeah, and you hear the water running in the dog video. You hear it. He'd washed up. And this phone, you know, tried to make a big deal about this phone that you saw. You do see right afterwards when we know he was down there. There's some movement on Maggie's phone. But every expert has said, just because if one phone's down here and the other one's walking, you're not going to have steps on that phone. He took Maggie's phone, the golf cart, however he got, drove back up to get those shorts and those that shirt. And yes, you can get it and manipulate it and call to see if you made a call, put it down. That's not going to record steps on that phone because it's not moving. But that doesn't mean it wasn't with his phone. Don't fall for that. That's not real. Every expert said that. Every expert said that. And doesn't that make sense? You can grab it. See, make a call, put it down. You keep walking, it's not going to record if it's there. It's in the car, it's in the Suburban, and I'm getting to that. So what happened? And this is why I asked Miss Rutland. And they're bringing in drug use. If he did as many pills as he said, he'd be dead. You can't take that many pills. That's your common sense. But why I ask her this, I'm asking, I want to look at every one of y'all. Tell me what he was like in that car. You've got the video. Did he appear to understand you? Yes, sir. Were his answers timely? Yes, sir. Were they subject matter appropriate? Yes. Do you understand him? He can understand you. Look, he's thinking. He's opening the door. Was he in his right mind? Of course he was. And why is that so important? He says he didn't go down there. Is that enough? Yes. With everything else, that's enough. I never went down there. He's in his right mind. I never went down there, Dave. I never went down there, Lord. I never went down there after supper. I stayed up. I took a nap. He goes from taking a nap from 6-7, then next time they met, 6-10. I took a nap August 15th. You sure you're down there? All right, up there taking a nap. Took a nap. I never went down there. Never, ever, ever. You think he would have taken the stand and said, you know, I was down there, y'all, if that video hadn't come out on that phone? Well, no. Now, under Mr. Waters' cross-examination, I lied. Why'd you lie? I wrote it down. I'm still not clear. I
almost had paranoid thoughts. Usually I can take a deep breath and get through it. But I couldn't, so I just lied. Once I lied, I continued to lie. And he continued and continued and continued until 627 days later when he took the stand, the first time he'd ever told anybody. He told his family, he told his friends, he told everybody, and they believed him. I wasn't down there. And why is that so critical? That's the time of death. That's when it happened. That's what the records show. That's when the conversation, yes, it is important. Paul, he uses his phone all the time. Paul is in a conversation about the dogs, interacting. Well, send me the picture. He does. And then it stops. Yes, that's when it happened. And then Maggie's phone. A little bit text. She reads that text. I think she went to her car. Y'all decide. Nobody knows. One person knows. She goes to her car. And she's got some rings there she's putting back on. I think she's got two rings there. And she's putting on another in the car. Maybe they've been working in the kennels. There's one shooter. There's only one shooter. And she hears that shot. And she comes back around. She hears the shot. She reads the last text. Y'all will have it in there. I think she opens the thing about Mr. Murdoch. He doesn't. And then you don't see anything else. You don't see anything else on the phone. So is that common sense? Yeah, that's when they were gone? Yes. Yes. When they interact so much. Yes. That's common sense. And that's why it's so important. You want to help law enforcement? You're in law enforcement? I was down there. Y'all know what? I was down there. I didn't take that nap as long as I did. Did you hear anything? Why would you not give that information? Okay, then the 10th, with his lawyer, Mr. Griffin, in the car. Did you go down there? No. Look at him. Is he coherent? Is he under the influence of anything? Is he withdrawing? No. I want to help you. I want to help you. And then on the 15th, here's this video. Here's you in the tree. Now, Rogan says he thought he heard you down there earlier. Well, I don't think so. Why not say it then? Think about it. Well, it's just Rogan's word. Does that make any sense? Just Rogan's word. No, sir, I can handle that. He made a mistake, like Shelley did. I'd mark it and close. No, sir. I can handle that, though. But when the video comes out, he's stuck. He's stuck. I'm going to try to wrap up. Yesterday morning at 2:53 in the morning, I don't sleep much during trials, but I kind of woke up. And what he did when he took the stand was corroborated that he's a liar. He corroborated the fact he doesn't tell the truth. The one thing that was more important than anything. And you know, they're putting these law enforcement on trial, talking about blood evidence, talking about other things that were presented to the grand jury, which you... That blood evidence was investigated, and the state didn't offer it. That's what you do in your prosecution. Didn't try to offer it. Now they're trying to put us on trial for doing our job. Think about that. Blame everybody else. Look, they looked into this, and it didn't turn out to be. So now we're going to blame them. We didn't try to present it. Isn't that how I... They're now jamming us for doing our job. Jamming us for doing our job. All the evidence of the guns, and I'm going to get that in a minute. The timeline, the incredible timeline, his lies, all of that, the gunshot residue, all of that's presented. And do we make mistakes? Yes. And that happens in life. But you don't lie and misremember being at the scene of a murder when you said you weren't even there, or being at the scene where your family was brutally murdered. You don't lie about that. That's not a mistake. That's not a mistake. This is the state of South Carolina versus Richard Alexander Murdaugh, not the state versus David Owens, not versus Sled. And I want to tell you something. Sled, Walterboro, Laura Rutland's working with David Owens. Sled starts working with the FBI. They're working together. This is, think about it. rush to judgment. They gave that man every benefit of the doubt. Oh, what are y'all doing? How's it going? You remember that third interview when he was, David Owens said, well, and I submit to you, they're taking those interviews where he's trying to come find out what they've got on him. Why is there this thing looking? How's this thing looking? Well, we've got some shell casings by Maggie's body, out over there where y'all shot the range, and some shots out there by the side of the house, the shell casings. They all were fed from the same gun. All cylindered in the same gun. You think if that didn't, they could find an expert to refute that, they would have? And Alex says, oh, really? So the gun was there? Yeah. You see his reaction? They all came from the same gun on Maggie. Now, the other one, Mr. Griffin tried to argue. Paul Greer, yeah, it could have come from that shotgun. Don't know. Is that credible evidence? But it could have. Not saying it did or didn't, but it certainly could have. He's got that gun. It's got Maggie's blood on it. Don't know if he used that or not. But I know the assault rifle's missing. And Will Loving comes from a fine family in Columbia, I can tell you that. Says we were down here not in March, it was more like May or April or May. We were shooting his gun on the side of the house in those shell casings. That's where they found them. And lo and behold, the shell casing matched the shell casings around Maggie. They were all silver in the same gun. They came out of the same gun. They've been in the same gun. Yes, Mr. Waters is right. That's a family-owned gun. And is that incredible, circumstantial, and direct evidence? Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir, it is. That's powerful. You can feel it like the rain. The murderers come in. There'll be a gun there. We'll just use their gun. Does that make any sense? Y'all too young. You ever watch Columbo? When I first looked at this case, this is an episode of Columbo, except this is real. And you get to see one of my heroes, the detective, didn't always look that good, wasn't all that. But he got to see the crime, and then you got to see him figure it out, and the mistakes they made. And that's what happened here. He killed him. He thought he could get a timeline, but it got him. Within 20 seconds, he's texting Maggie on that phone when he's passing the location of her phone. Is it common sense he threw that phone out, called her, and threw it, and the orientation didn't go on? They said, if you pick it up, yes. And we had somebody come in here. You throw it rough and it doesn't come on. And what are the chances is anything else? He'd almost had to bump into him. Almost had to bump into him. And you take this new story. I was down there till 8:50, whatever. Go up, take a quick nap, come back. He didn't hear the shots. Just happens to come back. And common sense, don't leave it with you. Take it back there with you. I'm down there now. My wife told me this. I'm down there under this new story. And the deal is to come talk. Go see my mama at 9:30. And you're right down there. You've just seen them now. Well, you said before you hadn't even seen them. Don't forget that. And you go up to the house. Why don't you say, hey, Mags, I'm going to go see Mom real quick. Just a few minutes later. No. You go up there. You take a quick nap. You know what? I'm going to try to call them. Let them know I'm going down. Does that make any sense? And then when you get to the Y, you'll see the light. When y'all went out there yesterday, those trees are much lower. Go back in and look at the way it was. And I think even Buster said, when you get down there, the light's on, you can see. Why don't you just go right over there? Hey, I am going down there. No? Doesn't hear anything, doesn't do anything. He just takes on. He just takes on. Does that make any sense? We've proved that nobody else could. With that timeline, does it matter when he's rushing back? Yeah. I doubt he's ever killed two people before. So he's not thinking, he's frantic. Puts the wrong two shells in the gun. Coming back, he's got Maggie's phone. It had been sitting there. That's why the steps weren't on there. He's moving. He gets it. I can't take this phone with me. He's a lawyer. So he tosses it out. That's the only thing that makes sense. And what did he say about Paul's phone when he went up there? And I started to get, I didn't know I got it out. And then it kind of just popped out too. Does that make any sense?
You've got to evaluate everything. You can't believe somebody's credible in one thing. How can you believe them on the ultimate issue when they said they didn't? When the only thing they corroborated for you throughout the investigation, throughout this trial, and throughout Mr. Waters' cross-examination is he's a liar. And that's all you can judge people on. The three witnesses that were beautiful, that were uncontroverted.
And one was Paul. He didn't testify to you
up on the stand, but he testified to Dr. Raymer.
And he testified to his family.
And here's so beautiful of evidence. It's so pure. He didn't know he took that video. That's why he said he wasn't down here. And this is beyond all that. We respectfully submit. Paul knew. Dad, I got some insurance. I got some insurance. Not the kind of insurance you've made money off of. An insurance some clients you gave back and some you didn't. I've got some insurance on you. I don't know why you killed me. I made some mistakes. You heard a lot of good things about Paul, too. I know I put your life, opened your life, your fake life, with this boat case. Your finances are coming out. I know that. But if you go lie and say you weren't down here, I got you. I don't know when it'll come out. Maybe you'll go ahead and lie. But this is going to come out. Paul had that insurance on him. And maybe that's why he was worried about that phone. And you can't make that up. Because you remember when I asked David Owens, does anybody else in the world, know that that video was out there except Paul? No, sir. And that's incredible evidence. And it did sit there until law enforcement working together, the states, the local, the SLED, everybody, got it out. And that's great law enforcement. Thank you. Yes, and that's when the case changed.
Along with all the other...
Maggie testified to you. He shot me here. He shot me here. And look at all the shell cases around me. Y'all look at them. They're the same ones that Will Loving shot with Paul. They're the same ones that have been shot down there.
Yeah. It came out of the same gun.
That's great direct insurance. And finally, and my daughter-in-law, Sally, and my Aunt Cece still calls my dad, Jack, this. My daughter-in-law been married about 3 months, one of the happiest days of my life, because they were happy. They were watching that Kimmel video. She and her dog, Tater. And when Bubba started to bark, that's what my aunt calls him, dead Bubba. Tater bark. And Sally said, isn't it something that your best witness in here are the dogs? You know, some people say they got a sixth sense. You think Bubba knew? You think Bubba knew something? He got Alex to say something. Bubba! Thank God for Bubba. DNA, and that DNA, when people live together, you'll have it all over you, sure.
That's not it. But DNA, in this case,
that dog negates all. Thank you, Bubba. And guess where Bubba is now? Bubba's with Blanca.
Bubba's with Blanca.
You can't make that up. And that puts him down there. And that's a lie he told and told and told. I went down there. Why aren't y'all doing something, law enforcement? Why aren't you telling us you were down there? Why aren't you telling us you were down there? Thank you. If he tried to respond to the phone, as Mr. Griffin said, it would show that he was going to Malmedia.
He had to get rid of that phone. He had to get rid of it there.
Finally, it's about your greatest power. My dad gave it to me when I was young. He said, read it. Your greatest power.
You know what it is?
Your greatest power is your power to choose. choice. We've all got it. We're born with it. We use it every day. We use it when we treat people, whether we say, hey, whether we're nice, whether we forgive people. We make good decisions. We make bad decisions. But what my dad always told me, don't blame anybody else. If you make a good choice, that's good. Don't get too cocky. Be humble, but that's good. But if you make a bad choice, you're responsible for it. The consequences. It's your greatest power. And for whatever was going on in his mind, his world's collapsing. It's coming down. All these worlds coming down financially. He's confronted that day by somebody's law firm. Where's his check? He's got another hearing coming up. It's a motive. Don't have to have it. But yes, there. And is this rational? Didn't he say that? Is that rational? Was it rational to be on the side of the road and claim you're shot? And when you're in the ambulance, and now watch this, if you need to, and you're talking to the officer in the ambulance, and you say, what happened? Oh, by the way, he wanted to kill himself. He called 911. He called 911. When he told the officer in the ambulance, well, what happened? Well, some guy shot me. He even did a sketch. He faked the sketch. But what did he tell the guy in the ambulance? It sounded like a shot. He's trying his world. And he says there in that last interview with Mr. Harfoot, the call-in interview, Mr. Harfoot and Mr. Griffin, what you got in there? Ryan, I'm sorry. I lied about everything. I was under a lot of pressure. I had a lot going on. Really? Your wife and your son were murdered 3 months ago. And now this is the real Alex. Well, my world's coming down. My world, Alex's world is coming down. Been confronted by his law partners. Losing his job. Now it's me. My world's being affected. Not about that, but now. And I'm sorry I lied. I've lied about everything. Richard Alexander Murdaugh loved. I think he loved me. I think he loved Paul. But you know who he loved more than that? You know who he loved more than that? And who he's going to make sure that life, wanted to make sure that life, he loved Alex. And he exercised his greatest power of choice to make sure that life continued. Or try. And it couldn't. And now, ladies and gentlemen, after his honor charges you, you're going to go back there and exercise your greatest power. Based on the evidence you've heard, the evidence you haven't heard, the credibility, the believability of the witnesses, and especially of Richard Alexander Murdaugh, who has lied and lied and lied and lied, and it's been okay. It got you through. It stops here. We respectfully request it stops here today. No, it's not a death. And we're going to exercise our greatest power and find you guilty of killing Maggie and Paul. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've now heard the evidence and you have heard the closing arguments. Next up will be jury charge and then your deliberations. We're at lunchtime. We're going to take a break for 1 hour and 15 minutes for lunch, and you'll come back. I'll charge you on the law, then you will deliberate. Please do not discuss the case.
That's the latest that we have for you. Keep it here for the last segment in court where the judge charges the jury with coming to a verdict in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Stay with us.